Welcome, players, to Nothing New, a remake podcast. Entering, Justin Keyson, co-host, player two.
Andrew Lindy, co-host.
Record!
But wait, a challenger has appeared.
Entering JPG. Fight!
I was not prepared for any of this. And I have to tell you, I'm pretty hyped for this right now. I thought I was very excited for recording with you guys. I am so jacked right now.
I'm glad we can spice it up for you today. Welcome again to a new episode of Nothing New. To clarify, if you couldn't hear the video game voice, I am Justin Keyson, and of course with me as always is...
Yep, I'm Andrew Lindy.
And as we pointed out, our special guest entering new challenger is returning guest... Jason JPG of Inquest for Geek. Hello, sir.
Hey, how we doing, guys?
Very good, very good. It is it's funny, whenever we try to figure out what episodes do we cover and what, you know, adaptations and readaptations we cover, sometimes we'll just go, let's skip that one. But something about Mortal Kombat felt like, nah, let's do Mortal Kombat. And of course, we're not just talking about Mortal Kombat. We are talking about Mortal Kombat from 1995.
And Mortal Kombat from 2021.
Woo! All right. Oh, my goodness. I don't even... Andrew, where do you even want to start with this?
I don't know. I feel like I have to out myself as I didn't really play the Mortal Kombat games, like, except for an occasional arcade visit. And I had not seen the 95 film in full until this watch. Mm-hmm. And so I don't really have a strong connection to it, I think, like some other people do.
JPG, how about you? What was your history with Mortal Kombat?
I am actually the some other people that Andrew is referring to at this point. I specifically asked you, I think on another episode of Nothing New, if I could be on this episode.
I think, while we were recording the Thomas Crown Affair episode.
Yeah. So, oh God, yeah. I wouldn't say that I was necessarily a big fan of the games. I definitely played them as a child, but was not good at them. but I am a gigantic fan of this film. Mm-hmm. And my body is ready in order to talk about this right now.
I gotta say, I think I was okay at the games, to be fair. Like, I was okay at them. But I realized upon watching this movie, and then other ones I've watched, other Mortal Kombat things we'll get to later, I started unlocking this gate of, I think I was way more into this franchise than memory serves me. I think... Like, all of a sudden, I was, like, remembering dumb lore from the at least first three Mortal Kombat games that I thought I didn't care enough about until, like, kind of diving back into this series. And I'm like, oh, I think I was way more into Mortal Kombat than I remembered. You know? and I definitely remember begging my older brother to take me to the 95 movie. Like, begging him. And he really didn't want to take me. This was like one of the two favorite movies I always remembered bugging him when I was a kid. That, like, please, please. And sometimes he tried to balance it out by having me watch like a classy film. And then I'll get one or two of these and he'd be like, fuck, fine.
I gotta tell you, the first thing that I wanted to start with, especially now being back on Nothing New, is Andrew. Yes. I found the Faye Dunaway connection.
No, come on.
No, how?
She's not in this.
How?
Now, I know I had to play a little bit of, like, 6 Degrees of Kevin Bacon on this one. Okay, so... The person who plays Princess Kitana in this film is Talisa Soto.
Yeah.
Talisa Soto played Donna Julia in Don Juan DeMarco.
Oh my god.
And if you've ever seen the film, in the film, it's Marlon Brando and Johnny Depp. And definitely Faye Dunaway in this.
Oh my god.
I didn't even have to work that hard. It was only one film away.
Only one connection. Wow.
Yeah. Only one connection.
I thought you were going to come out with something, some revelation that, like, Christopher Lambert dated Faye Dunaway at the time this movie came out or something.
Oh, God. That would have been amazing, actually.
I don't think
though.
That's true at all, but I, you know, the way that Hollywood like, works, you never know.
Can you two backtrack for the audience who doesn't know what's going on here? Like, what is the Faye Dunaway connection?
For some reason, anytime Andrew asks me to record a podcast, it always has to do with Faye Dunaway at one point, which
complaining. So she was in, you know, the Thomas Crown Affair, both of them.
She was in both of them. That's correct. Yeah.
And then I did ask JPG to be on my other podcast. It's on my list to talk about a film called Network, where she does feature in that film as well. And it was kind of a weird thing where it was completely unintentional. But I think JPG, I think you appreciated every invitation and every chance to see Faye Dunaway.
Oh, it got a little weird. I'm not gonna lie to you.
Well, then don't forget.
You know, I try to say.
Don't forget Dunstan Checks Min.
Yes.
Okay.
Dunstan Checks Min. She's also in.
Yes, JPG was on an episode. I don't remember if she featured heavily in the minute that I had you on for, but
in the minute I think that she does show up for for a second or so. But I did the Captain America the Winter Soldier episode for you, for Dunstan Checks Min. And yeah, man, every time you've invited me on, it has to do with something with Faye Dunaway.
I will say this is the one where you're Kevin. Yeah, like you said, you are Kevin Baconing. This is the one you're like, you're trying to find a hook. You're trying to find a little connection here. But I still find it hilarious that it didn't take very long. It took one actor.
Here's the problem. It took one actor, right? That's a problem, you guys. Now, Andrew's just trying to covertly hide Faye Dunaway into whatever we do at this point. And I don't know if I appreciate that or not.
Her influence is wide-reaching. He can't deny it.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. So Mortal Kombat, which came out in 1995, is a New Line Cinema production, and of course based off of the, at the time, super hot video game. And I almost feel like you're either a Mortal Kombat kid or a Street Fighter kid. Personally, I don't know. I think there are folks who are way more into one, more into the other, and if you aren't familiar with the original Mortal Kombat video game, it was kind of known for being, like, really unique because it had actual animated live-action actors playing the characters, and it was also super gory as heck and very violent in an extremely cartoony way. This, of course,
The trademark, I think, was the fatality. It was like when you defeated an enemy, you would do some kind of, you know, move that would. Whose move was it to remove the head with the spine attached? Was that Sub-Zero?
I feel like that was Scorpion.
Scorpion.
I think it was Scorpions, yeah. And like the whole deal of that is, of course, you know, parents got in the uproar for all the violence, which of course meant it only gave more attention to the video game series and made it more popular. So, and of course, this led to eventually a feature film based on the video game. And
directed by Paul W.S. Anderson,
yes,
who is not done making video game movies. He just made Monster Hunter.
Yep.
Which is based on a video game.
He's went on to be the spearhead creator of the Resident Evil movies. He didn't direct all of them, but he definitely was, like, at the least the writer of all of them and the producer of all of them.
Well, and his wife stars in that series in all.
Yeah, I was going to say constant employer of Mila Jovovich.
Yeah. I won't point out that he...
Yeah, she's not in this movie because maybe they had not met at this time, but I would not have been surprised to see her as Sonya Blade.
Yeah. It's funny. He, it took, I think Resident Evil, the first one, was like his, like, 1, 2, 3, 4. It was his fifth movie, Resident Evil. So then that was, by number 5, he met Mila Jovovich, and then that's where the never-ending Resident Evil movies kept coming around. I want to say this about Paul W.S. Anderson. One, he added the W.S. to kind of differentiate himself from the other famed Hollywood director named Paul Anderson.
Who added a T, though. So.
He added a T, so Paul Anderson added the W.S. to separate himself even more. My personal feelings on him as a filmmaker is wildly uneven on about every film he's ever made. Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. He's made so many movies. I haven't seen all of them, but the ones I've seen, I tend to just kind of go, you're always about 2/3 kind of cool, and then the rest is pretty bad. So that's why I go into saying, I still think this is his best movie to date. I still think the first Mortal Kombat is the best movie he's ever made.
I'm not going to disagree with you on this. Okay, my issue here, right, especially talking about Mortal Kombat as a film, and mm-hmm. Technically as a film franchise, because good lord, they gave this thing a film franchise. I have to try to be as objective as possible, you know, mm-hmm. as a critic, and, you know, and this is where I kind of draw the line. I draw the line with Mortal Kombat. Because I'm just going to outright enjoy this. Right? I can't even tell you how excited I was to rewatch this film. And I even messaged to you guys in the week. And I don't usually curse on air or anything like that. But you guys, this film fucks. All right? And I know that Andrew is keeping real quiet on his end because you probably disagree with me, but I will fight you tooth and nail this entire podcast for this.
Here's what I'll say. I really enjoyed this movie.
Yeah! All right!
I was trying to play a little coy, but to echo the same idea as Justin, I feel like I had absorbed a lot of the lore just by being a nerd. And so as this movie continued on, I went, oh, that's Raiden. I was just like, my brain like unlocked that information. And I was like, oh, right, of course. Like it just kind of every little thing that happened in the movie was like, oh, right, yeah. And this character does this and has this power and this thing happens. And I was just like, wait, why do I know all of these things? I don't know. I don't know how I know. But it was just, it all kind of worked. And I think, you know, the other idea is that this is a video game movie. So what it needs to do first is be a good, like, version of the video game. Like, it needs to bring what the video game had to a movie mm-hmm. and do those elements well.
Yeah.
And, you know, we haven't even gotten into, like, characters or actors or anything. But it's just the idea that when you translate the game to a movie, sometimes these things get caught up in like narrative. They have to introduce a new narrative because the original game didn't have a strong narrative. This is the narrative is here. It is a fight to save the Earth realm, as they call it.
Yeah.
And, you know, what do you do in the game? You have two characters that fight each other in a setting. Yeah. And what do they do in this movie? They have lots of scenes where two characters mm-hmm. are fighting each other and it's in different locations. That's
at
all that
almost
we need.
A jarring breakneck pace.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There, I won't put something out. The movie's structurally rips off only one other movie, and that's Enter the Dragon.
Oh.
More so than anything else. Like, you can make the argument that the Street Fighter series is inspired by, like, Bloodsport or, you know, that Van Damme movie or whatever. Maybe not Bloodsport specifically, but that kind of a movie. Whereas I definitely know that this movie wholesale steals from Enter the Dragon. and the reason it's that the setup is there's a big old tournament on a wild, you know, island where the main evil bad guy brings everyone on a boat, and our Asian hero, our cool white dude, this time they add a female, you know, lead to add to this. All meet up on a boat and slowly but surely each, you know, like, kind of take on the bad guys throughout the series until the big finale. This structure, I mean, it's very much like similar structure to Enter the Dragon, but it does change once they actually get to the island. That's where the Mortal Kombat video game stuff actually starts kicking in. Mm-hmm. But I kind of crack up as I was rewatching this movie. I do realize, like, they're like everyone says, like, it's fast and loose, right? Like, it's super quick. Everything, we go through all the bouts, all the fights, and then I try to ignore, but like there is the current thing to kind of crack up where you go like, what are the rules of this tournament? It does seem like it went from Liu Kang fighting a random dude to Sub-Zero. Like, was there no one in between? Like, Johnny Cage goes straight to fighting Scorpion. And I feel like, isn't Scorpion and Sub-Zero, they seem like they're pretty high in the hierarchy. Shouldn't it have been like a little bit later?
Oh, I just thought Johnny Cage just got, like, you know how, like, anytime you set up a bracket, there's just a really bad beat in at least, like, one or two brackets? I just thought Johnny Cage was real unlucky, and he's like, oh, you fight Scorpion first. Wait, what?
That's a, you know what, I'll give you that headcanon, it's totally fine.
Yeah, it's just a bad beat. Like, he just, like, he looks at the brackets, and he's like, oh, dang it, I'm fighting Scorpion first. And then, just a random forest on this island?
Yeah. I don't
anyway,
know.
Anyway, I have a lot of continuity issues, but I'm sure we'll get into that.
Before we get into that, let's roll down this cast. Let's start off with Lord Raiden himself, Christopher Lambert. Not a Japanese guy. I won't point this out. Not an Asian guy. But let me point something out. I have a weird soft spot for Christopher Lambert. I don't know why. Maybe because I like some elements of Highlander, and I almost generally like to see him in things. But this is by far my favorite thing he's in. I kind of super love him in this movie. This is probably his best performance. This is probably my favorite character he's ever done. I kind of love that he's sort of sarcastic and he's got that, like, wicked smile and he's funny. I love his Lord Raiden. I've always loved his Lord Raiden, and I guess I will continue to love his Lord Raiden. I like that bit where he's super excited and he punches a guy in the shoulder. He's like, sorry. You know?
I think what shocks me the most out of all of this was apparently he was just a really good dude to work with also.
Mm-hmm. Like, that's comforting to know.
Yeah. Paid for their rap party, traveled to Thailand on his own money in order to finish the film. Like, there's so many accounts of him just being a good dude about this whole film.
God damn. That's why that's a thing. I think of Christopher Lambert as a class act. That's a thing.
Well, and I think, you know, the like you said, with his portrayal of Raiden, it kind of he kind of taps into this weird energy of being like, yeah, I'm kind of my age, I'm eternal. I've had to deal with all these humans. I want to protect them, but God, they're so stupid. Like, he's just always like, he's always like, okay, do you even understand what's happening? Like, he just has that energy of just like, I have to teach another group of these fighters what to do? And he's always kind of, you know, throwing off weird pearls of wisdom that don't make a lot of sense. And I just like, he has this kind of thing where when they do start to get it, he just, like, he can't stop himself from looking at the camera and smiling and going like, I'm proud of him. I'm proud of these little humans.
My favorite thing to kind of break down is there's this scene of Raiden's first appearance where he's shown up at the monk monastery where Liu Kang's from, yeah, and everyone's like worshiping him. And I can't help but crack up on the fact that, like, here, I don't know why that the Southeast Asian monk organization worships a god with a Japanese name played by a Frenchman. I also don't care. You know?
Also, like, why is it a requirement that anytime that you leave the temple in order to fight, you just get the most feathery, luxurious hair? Because look at Robin Cho's Liu Kang, and then look at his brother in this as well. Like, how did they both just have luxurious hair after just being monks for that long?
I have no idea, and I was like, I almost feel like is that the payoff? Is that the equalizer? Like, what's also Robin Cho as Liu Kang, who I've always really liked in this movie. I always liked that they gave him a bit of a humor. He's got a bit of a sarcasm. He gets to have a little bit of a personality in here, and he's a lot of fun as Liu Kang. I always felt that way. We have Lyndon Ashby as Johnny Cage.
What is the deal with Johnny Cage? He just seems like, obviously, I feel like his name is, was it inspired by like Nick Cage? Like, it just feels like an extra fake name.
The answer for this.
Oh, please. I need to hear this.
Okay, so Johnny Cage was actually supposed to be the main character of Mortal Kombat before Liu Kang. And Kung Lao and like all the mythos and all that stuff too, right? Mm-hmm. It is rumored that the people who had made Mortal Kombat they were having Johnny Cage be the main character, and then before they made the name of Johnny Cage, this was going to be a Jean-Claude Van Damme like fight simulator.
Oh shit.
So that's why he's like, he does like the splits and like all this other stuff in it, because they based the character off of Van Damme with the thought process of, we're going to ask Van Damme to do all the motion capture for the game. And then we're just going to center the whole game around him and put him in fantastical elements and all this stuff too. And then we're going to ask him to be in the film if this ever becomes a film, which they did. And he said that he was going to do a Street Fighter instead, which is another film that if you guys ever do Street Fighter, I really want to be on, if you don't mind.
I feel like it's at this point, it's almost like we should probably just give that to you anyway. But I mean, that I did not know that. And so the irony of a whole character set built to be for Jean-Claude Van Damme to then ask Jean-Claude Van Damme to be a part of it. And he goes like, oh, I'm sorry, I'm going to be Guile for the competition.
Also, play this ridiculous American stereotype as the muscles from Brussels, apparently. But yeah, I don't know. There are a lot of problems. But anyway, yeah, Johnny Cage was supposed to be Jean-Claude Van Damme.
It's interesting because I would make the argument that he almost takes over as lead in this movie, because his story seems like a little bit more of an emotional stakes for him at a certain point, but it's a character arc kind of, to a certain degree. But I'm still glad it's like equal parts Liu Kang and him. You know, I feel like thankfully at the end of the day, like, Liu Kang is still kind of the center, he's still the lead of the story, so I'm kind of glad about that. We also have Brigitte Wilson as Sonya Blade.
Whoa. Put some respect to that name. It's Brigitte Wilson Sampras.
Oh, I forgot. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, sorry. Wikipedia screwed me on that. They did not update that on the page. But that's true. And I think this is what, fresh off of Billy Madison?
Literally the day after she stopped filming Billy Madison, yeah.
That's wild. That's amazing. Okay. And then I gotta call all respects to my man, CHT, Kirihiro Kitagawa, as Shang Tsung, who, I will always love this guy.
I don't understand, like, how you can live on this earth and have a voice so perfect.
Oh my god. Oh my
as
god.
As the three of us in podcasting, right? Like, yeah. Hiroyuki Tagawa, that is the voice that I want, right? If anybody ever narrates my life, that's the voice I want.
Oh, yeah. All these other, like, it's basic to say Morgan Freeman, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's
just...
Nah, you want Kiryuki. We want Hiroyuki Tagawa. You want him to talk about your day. It's like butter.
Look, not to be so white about it, but I would like Colin Firth to narrate my life. Thank you.
Yeah, listen, I'm okay with that. That's I'm okay with it. Yeah,
you can have Colin Firth. That's totally fine.
He is very dreamy in some early 2000s films, so I definitely appreciate that.
I understand that.
I feel like his the way that he speaks, like his sentence structure, would be very fun. Like just he has a certain way of putting emphasis on words that is just kind of a funny way.
Fair enough.
Shang Tsung, great villain.
Yeah,
great villain. I like especially there's this the way that this movie portrays him is really good. I like that he is seen as very powerful, but you're always aware that he's serving someone else.
Yeah,
you know that there is, you know, the emperor is who's really behind whatever's going on here. But it's like you know, people call him they just, isn't it a Raiden just calls him like sorcerer, like that's always a whenever you have a character that someone can yell and call them just sorcerer, that's always a good one.
Yeah, you know it's going to be a good bad guy.
I also love that they decided in this movie that all the stuff that you would hear in the video games, like all the announcer stuff, is going to be said by him. And it makes sense narratively. He's the guy who's looking over at the tournament. So it's his island. It's his island. So it makes sense that he'll be like, fatality, flawless victory, you know?
So did anybody else tell CHT to just not go as hard? Because I feel like that was a conversation multiple times where like, hey, man, we're just trying to make a Mortal Kombat film. You don't have to be this good. Right? And like nobody told him and Robin Shou, like, hey, dude, this is just a Mortal Kombat film. Just like chill out for a second, right? Just phoned in a couple times.
And they're like, no. Yeah. CHT's like, I refuse to phone anything in. Like, okay, no problem. side note, if you've not seen Johnny Tsunami, he's actually wonderful as the grandpa in Johnny Tsunami. Oh my
God. Now I need to watch Johnny Tsunami.
He's amazing. I love him as the grandpa in Johnny Tsunami. That's a movie I just saw, and I watched it for Disney Plus Diversity, and then I was surprised and go like, oh my God, he's so good in this movie. It's beautiful. The scene, he has some great scenes in that movie. I do recommend Johnny Tsunami just for CHT. we also have Talisa Soto as Kitana, as JPG mentioned earlier. And I as the nerd, I'll just say it's a shame she doesn't really get to have her fans in this one. She gets it in the second movie. Mm-hmm. We have Trevor Goddard as Kano. I want to say that... Go ahead.
Anytime somebody plays Kano, they're just going to have fun. Like, you're not really showing up for work if you're playing Kano in any sort of live-action adaptation. Even, like, the voice actors. Like, how do you get paid to have this much fun? I'm kind of mad about that.
And apparently, this is the movie that popularized the concept that Kano was Australian. Because in the games, in the first game, he was vaguely Asian, I guess. And then they made Kano Australian in this movie, and Trevor is so stupidly entertaining that he leaves such a freaking like imprint on the character that from this point on they were like, okay, I guess Kano's Australian, you know.
I just I do appreciate the fact that, oh wow, Kano was so useless in a fight. They built him up so much and he was so useless.
I'll only add one more and then we'll move on to the rest. Goro, which is done as an animatronic puppet into this film, is voiced by Kevin Michael Richardson. If you're like an animation nerd, you will definitely recognize other cartoons he's been in, he's done his voice for. Jeez, I can't for funsies. His resume is too big. He's done a lot of voiceover work, so he's very distinct, and in that he's the one who portrays Goro
now,
in the film.
Goro is the four-armed champion of Mortal Kombat.
Yeah,
and so that's why it's important that he's kind of like an animatronic puppet. And I thought he looked good.
He looks good. That puppet really surprisingly holds up. I actually really like the scene between him and Kano, where he's sort of like, you know, like we get to kind of see him as a character. He gets to sort of like, we see him as kind of this arrogant, kind of regal kind of guy. Also, he's this giant, big forearm dude, you know?
We also, I mean, for Goro himself, right? Like, that took up to 16 people in order to puppeteer.
Mm-hmm. 16 people.
Like how do you even, I can't even figure out one puppet. Like, how are 16 people gonna figure this out, right?
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense because the face has a lot of different facial expressions. The mouth is moving at least partially. I mean, it's not exactly on the words, but they do a lot of cutting away so they can kind of cover for that. But we definitely get a lot of, like, facial expression out of Goro, which is, you know, that's kind of great to see in a physical way. It's not, this is, you know, right at the verge of CGI becoming just the standard for a character like this.
Yeah. Also,
Justin, I really do feel like you forgot one very important character.
Before I get to that character, I do want to point out that, like, I like that, because Andrew mentioned Goro's facial expressions. I do want to say, I do like that his design is vaguely Boris Karloff-y.
Like, God.
He 100%.
This is going to be a weird podcast.
He looks so much like Boris Karloff. I just can't help myself. It's like, yeah. But go ahead. Who'd I miss? Who'd I miss?
Well, I mean, it's not a character in the most traditional sense, but I would say the most important driving force of this film is the soundtrack.
Oh, my goodness. I gotta... Oh, all right.
The very first EDM record to ever go platinum is the Mortal Kombat soundtrack.
And it deserved it.
Yes. Because it did not have to go as hard as it did.
Yeah.
It starts with the Mortal Kombat, the Techno Syndrome Mortal Kombat done by the Immortals. It starts with that song.
There's like, not even like a primer. It just goes right into the song and you're like, "Okay, cool. This is what I got to expect for the rest of the film."
No, this song, if there's a list, if there's a song that goes like zero to I want to fucking like hardcore punch a wall multiple times, that's this song. I can go from being really sleepy to hearing the first couple of beats and go, I'm ready to fucking punch anyone today. Let's go. You know?
On my gym track list, this is the very first song on my gym track list. It just gets me. It gets me hyped. I'm definitely gonna beat somebody up at the gym. Like, that's it, man.
This is a song I would not put on my driving playlist because I fear I'll be going too fast. Like, I will be pulled over because I'll be going too hard on the road.
Yeah, man. Because it is a banger, and it will always be a banger.
And it's such a good song that like the idea to use like the names like from the video game to pull the name, you know, the name, you know, when you pick a player, the name, then you can hear the name of the character, that they put that in the song, which makes it great, perfect for trailer cutting, you know.
Oh yeah.
Like, you watch the trailer for the first Mortal Kombat movie, it's like, you know, Raiden, Sonya Blade, you know, and they get the chance to showcase all the characters, and so as a kid you're like, oh my god, here they are. There's Liu Kang. There's Sub-Zero. There's Scorpion.
Oh, God.
I do want to talk about, bringing up CGI, there is a character in this film that is CGI until he's not, and then it's kind of like the best fight scene I've ever seen in my life. Reptile is like a creature that is sent to watch over like Kitana and make sure that she doesn't help out the humans.
Mm-hmm.
But then when they get to, there's a sequence where they go to Outworld and Reptile somehow goes into the body of a fighter and becomes a fighter. That was the coolest thing I've ever seen in my life. I was so blown away by that. I was like, I did not expect this at all. I didn't expect this transformation to occur. the fight that happened was perfectly placed because it was, you know, they had been fighting on this weird island and then they go to the other world. They go to Outworld. Like, this is where all these crazy characters are coming from.
Yeah.
And now this crazy, there's a crazy fight right away once they get there. And it's, you know, it's between Liu Kang and Reptile, who was previously just like a weird CGI creature.
Yeah.
And is now like a fighter. And that kind of, what I liked when I read into it was that that kind of, in my mind, mimics what is in the first game where Reptile is a secret fighter.
Exactly.
That you can unlock. And it's like, oh my God, it's like they unlocked Reptile by going to the other world. Like, it's just so, it perfectly matches like the tone of the game. I
absolutely.
It's very exciting.
I know. I'm totally with you. That's what I thought too when I was a kid. And like, you're right. That is such a cool. That's a cool, like almost like I wouldn't even say Easter egg, but it's such a cool way of honoring that game. That even the Reptile character shows up as a bonus round in the movie. Mm-hmm. You know, it's pretty good.
And that's the fight where Liu Kang does his kicking.
He does the bicycle kick. Yeah. It's wild because we're kind of going all over the place with this, and that's fine because it's Mortal Kombat.
If people weren't expecting an all over the place recording for this one, because the film doesn't make sense, Justin.
It doesn't.
Like it does not. There is a plot, I guess, but we're just here for the ride.
I think just in general, we've given up on going beat for beat with these movies because we've always got something wild to say about a character or about a scene or something.
Yeah.
To take us off topic.
And that's the thing. The moment things are mildly linear until we get to the island, and then who cares?
Okay, I gotta ask though. Mm-hmm. What was your favorite fight in this whole film? Who was your favorite fight?
Oh, shoot.
I mean, I've already just said it. It's Liu Kang versus Reptile. That was...
Oh, yeah. It was a good one.
That blew me away because it was like the reveal of Reptile. It was a good fight. He does the bicycle kick. It was like, oh, yeah, this is exactly what I wanted out of this movie.
That was actually one of the reshoots that they did also.
And that was a smart move.
Smart.
Apparently... Reptile was just supposed to die in that, like, tomb thing in the statue, and then that was it. And then, like, test audiences were like, I want to see them fight. And they're like, okay. And then they just recorded another fight scene for that whole thing.
Yeah, and that's really cool because then it gave him a chance to get one more. Because, yeah, Reptile in the game is, like, he's a color-swapped ninja. So it's really cool that they were like, all right, well, then good thing Reptile has a ninja form in the game. You know, it's real easy.
Yeah, it is funny for me to also think of, because isn't it, it's Liu Kang and Johnny Cage are in Outworld at that moment. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Liu Kang just goes off and fights Reptile and Johnny Cage just kind of stands there. Like, we don't see what Johnny Cage is doing while that whole fight is happening. I just assume he's just standing there.
I might admit, I think that for me, my personal favorite fight, because the fights were decent to pretty good throughout the movie. And then we get the Johnny Cage Scorpion fight. And I'm like, this is pretty fucking good. And I think it helps that the film does a lot of, they do a lot of long takes with this fight, in which I think Johnny Cage's actor's, like, martial arts stunt double was able to do a lot more longer, choreography with Scorpion. It's also a lot of really cool, goofy, like, stuff in hell. You get the get over here. You kind of get all the check marks of Scorpion stuff in this fight. And you end with a legitimate final move that Johnny Cage actually does do in the video game, which is throw the autograph on the Gorillas at them.
Well, because you get Scorpion's final move. You get his fire head move as well, which is...
You do.
So you get everybody's move in that fight. And I think, just to say one other thing about that fight... As I liked how it played with the progression of the level. So it's like the stage itself starts as like they're on this rickety, bamboo wood thing. And then Johnny Cage is able to jump to a higher level. and then drops down to the level where all the skulls are on the like the ground of hell. So it kind of, it's a progression of the fight where they start in one spot, they go to another spot, and then they end at a third spot, and it's a banger. Like, that is, that's kind of how these fights should be structured in these kinds of movies.
No, the geography use and the choreography really work really well in this fight. Like, my favorite little detail is when Johnny Cage and Scorpion will throw each other, and the camera's below them so you can see, like, the dust coming out every time they hit the ground on the ledge. It's really, really cool. I also really do like the Sub-Zero Liu Kang fight, though. I thought
that was really good. Wait, we gotta go back, because I have some things for you guys.
Okay,
Scorpion-Johnny Cage fight.
Yeah.
There were only two reshoots that they did for to extend fights. That was the second extended fight.
Interesting!
That shadow kick by Johnny Cage was supposed to just straight up end Scorpion's life.
Shut up!
But instead, they're like, oh no, we're gonna transport you guys. You guys are gonna be the second reshoot. And they're like, yeah, for sure. Like, we're gonna have a whole bunch of fun with this, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. Why is it in every, like, 90s, early 2000s film that if somebody is going to be fighting, there needs to be some sort of gymnastics, uneven bars scenario that can literally beat anything that you're fighting? Because we have this, where you're literally beating this ninja from hell. And then a few years later, you also have this in one of the Jurassic Park films, where a little girl murders a velociraptor this way.
Yeah, we were in a, I don't know what it was, maybe, yeah, there was like a weird gymnastic.
Why? Why did we always have like, yeah.
I wonder if, and, was that when, I mean, look at when the Olympics were, right? You gotta see if people's minds were on, you know, Olympic fever.
Was Paul W.S. Anderson just like a gigantic fan of Gymkhana? Like, is that like, is this too deep of a reference?
I want to point out that that is not an out of the question theory at all. I want that to be clear. Also, it's so funny you bring up Gymkhana. If you don't know Gymkhana, it's a martial arts movie based off around an Olympic gymnast. And do y'all know who directed Gymkhana?
No.
Robert Klaus, who directed Enter the Dragon.
Oh my god, I hate this.
Comes full circle. Comes full circle. I actually now want to see Paul W.S. Anderson remake Gymkhana. I almost feel like it's his time. He might finally make his second masterpiece if he gets around to this. Let's just accept his fate, you know?
Okay, you were talking about Liu Kang and Sub-Zero.
I like that fight a lot. And I think that's the one where I have heard that Robin Shaw actually put a lot of work into that one, even with the choreography, because he wanted to make sure there was a lot of long takes. Because, yeah, the thing is, at the end of the day, Lyndon Ashby is not a martial artist. Bridget Wilson Sampra is not a martial artist, so they tried, you know, so with what Robin is, it's kind of, you know, that was what he kind of tried to make sure that, like, okay, well, I can actually do this stuff. So it's like they try to make sure they do a lot, as much long takes as they could to showcase that sequence there. So I thought that fight, I thought, was really kind of cool. Cool Sub-Zero. Anyway,
I'm never coming on the show again.
No, you will.
Oh yeah, Street Fighter. I forgot.
Yeah. You're stuck. Sorry.
Or we could just get another guest for that episode, huh? What do you think?
Don't do it. I'm sorry.
I think Alex maybe would be a great.
How? Dare you guys use my wife against me?
I wouldn't want JB to have to repeat too much with doing two fighting video games movies.
We should probably mix it up. I mean,
we would not be friends in real life if you did that to me. I'm gonna tell you that now. Our friendships would be ended.
The friendship would lead to a fatality.
Now, I think it's very funny that you're very clear to mention that Lyndon Ashby is not a trained martial artist when he is playing the Hollywood star who is a martial artist and he's trying to prove that he's very good at martial arts by being in Mortal Kombat and that he's not just an actor. And yet here it is a man who is just an actor and not very good at martial arts. Sorry.
Yeah, that doesn't escape me either. I do kind of find that funny. I actually want to point something out. So, as a kid, you know, it's been a while since I actually sat down to watch this from beginning to end. But as the memory of the movie kept, you know, like staying in my head after all these years, I remember being at one point being a little annoyed that, like, and this is where I realized, oh right, I do have more memories about the game's lore than I realize. And so, for me, it was like, okay, in the game, I believe Goro was, you know, the famous thing about Goro's battle with Liu Kang is that Liu Kang was the only one to defeat Goro in the tournament. And so that was kind of Liu Kang's sort of famous, you know, what he got out of the, you know, the fame he got out of the Mortal Kombat. And then in the movie, they gave that to Johnny. And at first I was, you know, for the longest time, I had a little gripe with that. It was like, oh, but in the game, Liu Kang was the one who defeated Goro, not Johnny Cage. He gave it to the white guy again, blah, blah, blah. And you know what? I'm going to retract that thought as I was rewatching it. Because I realized, like, well, Liu does get the final fight with Shang Tsung. Mm-hmm. He does actually fight both Sub-Zero and Scorpion. And then I realized that the way it's done for Johnny isn't that the movie just handed him Goro. Johnny asks, he requests to fight Goro. Because that's part of his, God help me, his arc in the movie.
Oh, God.
And I'm like, wait, that actually works. It's fine. I don't have a problem with it now. I do feel like Sonya does get the short end of the stick, though. Yeah.
Okay, so here's the issue, right? Yeah. Bridget Wilson Sampras, literally, like, the day before she started filming Mortal Kombat, she just finished Billy Madison.
Right.
She was training in martial arts during the filming process, and you could definitely tell. Mm-hmm. I say this because her stance for martial arts is just, like, hunched over with two fists.
Right.
Just, like, ready to go, I guess. I don't know. I have a problem with stances, right? Mm-hmm. And this comes from just, like, my own knowledge with fighting. And I love mixed martial arts. I love any type of hand-to-hand combat. Like I love fight sports, all that stuff, right?
Yeah.
And one of the things that just starkly hits me in this film is just how unprepared she is for a fight all of the time.
Yeah.
And they really tried to position her as, like, oh my gosh, she's, like, the most awesome cop, and she's the best fighter out there, and all of this. But my favorite fight scene, is when Johnny Liu Kang and Sonya just, like, fight those random ninjas.
I love this scene.
Because that's the only time where I'm like, okay, I guess you can kind of fight, because every other time she cannot fight, and it's just a bad posture, and then she, like, somehow gets sex hair at the end of the film.
Yeah, they damsel her, which is
it is a bad take. If he would have taken Johnny instead, that would have been incredible.
And still given him the sex hair? That would have been funny.
Yes!
Well, and then I just found out that Cameron Diaz was originally cast as Sonya Blade.
Yeah.
But due to a wrist injury, she had to be replaced. I'm imagining a world where she kept the part. And I think she actually would have been pretty good, honestly. I think she would have done fine. But, yeah, you can see because of that situation that, like, yeah, like, the rushness of her learning while on Billy Madison and doing all that. Yeah, it falls a little short with everyone else. And then, yeah, no, she gets damseled. I do like the idea. Because here's the thing, right? Like, Shang Tsung's... I forgot this entirely. That Shang Tsung has a hard thing for Sonya Blade.
Oh, it's weird. He makes it weird. Yeah. That's just, like, a testament to CHT's acting in this, because yeah, he makes me feel uncomfortable every time he talks about Sonya Blade.
My dear Sonya.
Well, it's a very weird thing where I thought at first part of the the Mortal Kombat thing is that what Shang Tsung is doing is making sure that the fighters aren't prepared. All the fighters coming to join for Mortal Kombat are not as good as they could be. So it kind of, I was like, oh, he's picking Sonya because she is a fighter, but not the best fighter. He's picking, you know, he's making sure that Johnny Cage shows up because he's trying too hard to prove, you know, that he's something that he isn't. So that makes him, you know, again, not the best. And then same thing with Liu Kang. He entices Liu Kang because of the, you know, he hasn't been training with his monastery for all these years. Right. So it's kind of like, are the, you know, I thought he was picking like the second stringer, but then, yeah, as you said, when you get to the end, it's basically, he's like, ah, yes, I've got Sonya all to myself now.
and you're going to fight me, aren't you? You're tickle fight me, Sonya.
I know. Dude, I was going to say, like, I think, you know, getting to watch this now with like the benefit of going through puberty, I definitely missed that subtext of like, oh, like Shang Tsung's just trying to bang, right?
Yeah.
And like, and now, you know, as an adult, like, I'm really glad I watched this film on my own instead of like having to watch it with like my wife on this one and to have to explain to her like, oh yeah, like I love this film, but also this is making you real uncomfortable right now. and so I don't know. I think, I still have a lot of love for this film, right? I definitely can see a lot of the problems that are with it. But then also, having the benefit of hindsight, it wasn't as problematic as I thought we were going to be getting into again.
Yeah, I can agree to that. I feel like, obviously, you know, the Asian representation is super lacking in this movie set in a fictional... with a franchise that's clearly white guy's version of Asian shit, you know, we only got two, which is Liu Kang and Shang Tsung. Like, even the ninjas are not Asian actors. Those are, you know.
A lot more black extras in those groups as well for, like, the random ninjas.
Sure, that's true.
Yeah, I was very surprised as, like, I thought they were just going to get... No, they really just focused on, like, getting buff people, like, in the background of this, and I really appreciated that.
Yeah, hard, like, was there, like an outworld, like, oiler for their bodies before they entered the, like, anything, you know?
Now, I like that idea a lot, because I like the idea of outworld is a really weird place. Like, here's where the movie really took a... great turn. I already said, you know, the fight with Reptile was a big part of it, because that takes place in Outworld. And when they travel to Outworld, and we get kind of the, like, history of Outworld, we see that it's kind of a messed up place because the Emperor has just taken it over and taken all the resources. My brain instantly turned to another film from the 90s based on a video game.
Here we go.
And that's Super Mario Brothers. This is Outworld is Dino Hatton. It blew me away. I was just like, what? Like, I just could not even stop myself from thinking it, because it's there. It's all there.
I Are was you kind like... of waiting for when you will how. And I respect it, might I add, but I was waiting for it.
Are you just contractually obligated in order to mention Super Mario Brothers just any chance you get now?
Well, no, but as my friend Luigi says, no, I just really think there was something, you know, in the water at the Hollywood writers, you know, studio, whatever, wherever all these writers got together when they were trying to make a video game movie, they just had to have this kind of world, this kind of destroyed world by a mad emperor who's taking all the resources and wants to merge the two worlds. That's the whole plot of Super Mario Brothers.
I mean, yeah, listen, you're not wrong.
you're Even not Katana is like almost a Peach, because she is the princess, but she is not the emperor's daughter. The emperor took her in after taking over her world.
Right.
Like, that's it's all there. I don't even...
it's
Liu
funny.
Kang, you mentioned... Luigi, do you hear
oh my
it? It's
goodness.
All there.
Okay, get out. That's get out
reach.
Now.
Now that's a reach. That's a reach. I do want to say, like, the thing with... I want to point something out about this franchise as a whole, and as especially when you get deeper into the other various medias based on Mortal Kombat, is like, Mortal Kombat is, and I mean this with all sincerity, a stupid franchise. It's a bit on the stupid side, but I think that's fine. And I feel like when you're doing something based off of Mortal Kombat, you gotta be a little stupid, because it's all silly. It's all silly, goofy stuff. And I think once you can accept that, then Mortal Kombat 1995 embraces that wholeheartedly. And that movie is top to bottom knows that it's a good time, you know. And whether it's opening with the Immortals, you know, like, track of the, you know, and the fact that the movie just goes from set piece to set piece to set piece, and it doesn't care. The fact that, like, you have various characters with powers, and I don't care how they got them, you know, like, there's even, like, one line from Shang Tsung that's, like, Sub-Zero Scorpion, greatest of enemies, but under my rule. It's like, that's your backstory, don't worry, that's it.
you're even, I mean, that's Sub-Zero and Scorpion who come from Outworld, which is like, yeah, things are funky on Outworld, they have magic and stuff. Yeah. Kano has a robot eye? That's just in the movie and just accepted?
Yeah. Because again, Terminator's a popular thing, right? Oh, so sure. Here's a guy that reminds you of Arnold for no good reason. I don't know why he has a robot eye. No one can answer that question, and no one wants to ask. You know? No one cares.
Yeah. I was pretty bought in.
It's, yeah. I think that's the thing for, like, what, hour and 32 minutes? This movie is like, do you really want to know the in and outs of everything, or do you just want to see a bunch of people fight? Like, well, yeah, I think I just want to see a bunch of people fight. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I was like, oh, probably, maybe I won't like it as much now. And then I watched it again and went, nope. Nope, this is still a fun time.
If anything, I enjoy it more, right?
Yeah.
I enjoy it more, you know, like Asian lead, there's a redemption arc for a very terrible white guy mm-hmm. in this film. you have the hammiest Christopher Lambert ever.
Yep.
like peak Kerry Hirohiki Tagawa?
Yeah.
Come on, man. Come on.
The music that we all agree slaps. I mean, yes. Like...
Every time.
Like, various fight scenes that either go, fine to... Oh, yes. Like, and like, yeah, like, for Paul Anderson, this is a movie where I felt like this is like, all right, I got a lot to prove. You know, Hollywood's giving me the chance, and it's a lot of, like, fun visuals and cool coloring, like cool lighting and cinematography for just funsies, you know? Like, I remember, like, when Liu Kang wakes up and his room is lit green, and I'm like, I don't care why. Like, it's Liu Kang's introduction scene. He's like, oh no, he's got this vision of his brother dying, and his room is lit green. I went, I don't care why. It looks cool.
I just still, like, I still don't understand why he, like, they kept making the point of, well, you ran away to America. Mm-hmm. Like, what were you doing there, dude? Like, yeah. Were you, there's just no rhyme or reason. He just has this, like, free apartment in America, and then he just goes right back home after 10 years.
Yeah, what was
I
he,
don't know, man.
What was he doing in America? I don't know either, right? And like there's, if you want to, like, go hard, I didn't do this, but like, if you want to examine the stuff in his room, like, it's like, what kind of life was Liu Kang living in the States? I don't know either. Maybe too much television, like that one monk said. I don't
God, oh yeah, it's America has enfeebled his mind. That's a great line, I had to write it down.
Too much television. And it even ends with, like, a cliffhanger that shows Shao Kahn, and everyone's, it's like, and freaking Raiden's going, nah, buddy. And you know what? Everyone poses, and it's like, yeah. It's a shame they never made another Mortal Kombat movie. it's a shame they never made a sequel to this movie. It's ripe for...
A fourth Indiana Jones film would have been nice, huh?
Okay, I was going to say, I didn't know if we were making a joke on this one, because I was like, wait... You guys have never seen Annihilation?
Oh, well, I'll pause my thoughts on that.
Where literally no one came back except Liu Kang and Katana?
Why don't we pause our thoughts on that? I think before we'll talk about that in the second half. Andrew, is there anything else you want to add concerning 1995 Mortal Kombat?
Oh no, this was—it's a fun movie. I think that's what we were trying to hit on, and that's—it's the most that you could hope for when you adapt a video game where all of the action is just two characters fighting. Like this is this is all you could hope for, and it delivers.
All right, we'll take a pause on that. Go hit some. We'll hit a commercial break, and then right afterwards, we'll talk about the future of Mortal Kombat.
Feeling peckish this midnight? Set your appetite for terror and reserve your ears for a feast of the sound. The Midnight Marinara podcast is here for you, intrepid listener. We sample only the finest in sinister stories and, coating them with our own unique spooky sauce, present them to you as eerie audio dramas. Tune in as Midnight Marinara sends shivers of fear and spasms of laughter through you. Bon appetit.
Okay, so before we get into the rest of Mortal Kombat, we thought we would give you a little preview of our Patreon episode. That's right, we have a Patreon, patreon.com/nothingnew, where every month we do an episode that is sometimes related to the main episode, sometimes just about remakes in general. This one, I'll say, is a little of both, as you will hear right now.
I distinctly remember when the Hitman movie came out, I had a friend who was so mad at the movie. I don't know if I agree with him, but I also didn't really play the game, but he was so mad. As like, the obvious guy to play this part is clearly Jason Statham, and they didn't even ask him.
Yeah, I like that. That's definitely, that makes a lot of sense. What, you know who just popped into my head, but I don't even think he would, I don't know. I can't even remember if he really had an action period, but like someone like, I don't know how he'd look with a shaved head, but Josh Hartnett.
Okay, now hold on. Hold the phone. I actually came around to Josh Hartnett at a certain point. Once again, you can follow us on Patreon for just $1 a month. You'll be able to get access to that episode. And also, again, a reminder that if you pay for the $20 tier, we will do a remake of your choice. So once again, if you want to have control over our show, you can just spend $20 and we will do whatever episode you want, and that will be your choice. So anyway, once again, thank you again. If you are a patron supporter, we always appreciate the extra dollar you give to us to keep the show going. Before we move on to the rest of the Mortal Kombat discussion, JBG, please tell the fine folks where they can find you and your other projects.
Of course. So I'm JBG. I am a pop culture critic and geek educator. You can find most of my work at In Quest of Geek. That is going to be guiding your next pop culture journey. So I do weekly podcasts. Our team does Twitch streams. And then I'm actually a voice on multiple actual play RPGs. You can find us at In Quest of Geek on any social media that you can think of.
Awesome. Thank you. Also, you are a guest on my other series, the Disney Plus Diversity. You will be showing up to discuss the Pixar short, the Pixar short Bao, which will be coming out this month in May.
Get ready for a lot of crying.
Blubbering mess. We were discussing that movie. Okay, so moving on to back to the Mortal Kombat discussion, we will...
So Mortal Kombat Annihilation, huh?
Oh, man!
Oh, no! Are we doing this?
Let's do it!
Are we doing
real this quick, right now? Let's just rip this Band-Aid. Let's go.
So in my usual way, because we just cover the film and the remake, but because I'm that person, I want to watch everything in between. So I did, in fact, watch Mortal Kombat Annihilation. And yeah, that's a bad movie, huh?
That, I'll tell you my experience with that real quick. I was in the theater with my friends, and we were all hyped because we really loved the other one. And I remember the trailer for Alex Proyas' Dark City in front of it. And I remember thinking, oh my god, that movie looks awesome. I wonder if it's as good as Mortal Kombat Annihilation. I was such a naive child. And we got to the end of Annihilation. I walked out of the theater and I went, the hell just happened? Oh!
I just feel like if your first move is to kill one of your main characters at the very beginning of the film, your writers already have problems.
Well, and then to talk about the, as you mentioned, the first film already was struggling with Asian representation despite being set, you know, in a made-up Asian landscape. Then when you get to the second part, both the emperor and his dad or son, or I don't remember which one was the emperor, but there was two white guys.
Yeah. Annihilation.
I mean, it is. Yeah.
Sucks. It's bad. It's just top to bottom terrible.
Yeah. There were a lot of issues when it came to the director coming back. There were a lot of issues in terms of actors and actresses coming back, writing teams coming back as well. So I think this is the prime example of something being made because it was on your contract instead of making it out of love and out of fun and all that as well.
Yeah, no. The only ones that came back in terms of cast was Robin Shu and Talisa Soto. Everyone else was recast. It's a testament to Paul W.S. Anderson that the directing in the first movie actually looks interesting and stylistic, whereas this one looked like Annihilation looked like it was shot to be a TV show, but it was a film. And
ooh, yeah, it has big TV energy all around it.
Real bad. It's awful. I hate what they did to Raiden. You know, it was top to bottom. I despise this.
Played by James Remar, by the way.
A guy who I can like. It's just, it sucks here. And then they cut his hair and like, I don't.
He unlocked an alternate costume.
It's a terrible alternate costume.
Boo.
And then, so to move on from Annihilation, I did also watch Mortal Kombat Legends Scorpion's Revenge.
The animated
film that came out last year. And I kind of liked it. I don't know. It's a weird thing where they center it on Scorpion and then redo most of the 95 film and Joel McHale voices Johnny Cage. So there's a lot
that's
going on there.
That's kind of great. I actually might watch it for
that. Yeah, that's
now here's
that's
the
pretty on brand.
Here's the thing though. We're going to talk about now Mortal Kombat 2021. And stop me if this sounds familiar, but they kind of recenter it on Scorpion and then redo a lot of the 95 film? Wait a second.
We'll get there. Yeah. So Mortal Kombat 2021, directed by Simon McQuid, written by Oren Uzel, Greg Russo, and Dave Callahan, produced by James Wan, and I would point to that after Annihilation, there was multiple attempts to try to do a third film for multiple reasons, and it just stayed in development hell for 2 decades. They couldn't figure it out, you know. And on top of that, there was a Mortal Kombat web series called Mortal Kombat Legacy that could have been a build up to a feature film, but didn't go out that way. There was, of course, Mortal Kombat Conquest, a TV show that came out around the same time as Annihilation that had Paolo Montalbán as Kung Lao. So, hey, Filipino guy, right on. but a proper Mortal Kombat feature film didn't happen until this one. And, yeah, there was a struggle to finally get this to be made, and the answer apparently was to just reboot it, start all over again, with the exception of this time putting a bigger focus on the backstory between Scorpion and Sub-Zero. Two mixed results, I will say. generally speaking, on this one, I want to start with the casting again, and I want to at least start with a positive thought on this, in that, unlike the last time, a movie that we all agreed we had a good time with, let's be clear, we had a good time with Mortal Kombat 1995. yeah, Asian representation, extremely lacking. Not this, though. Not this one. We have Ludi Lin as Liu Kang. We have Chin Han as Shang Tsung. We have Joel Taoism as Bi-Han, a.k.a. Sub-Zero. We have Hiroyuki Sanada as Hanzo Hasashi, a.k.a. Scorpion. We have Max Huang as Kung Lao. We have...
Louis Tan,
Louis, I was going to get to him. We have Louis Tan as our new lead, Cole Young. And I want to point something out. If this movie was made 15 years ago, that would have been a white guy.
Yeah.
Hardcore. And I just read an interview with James Wan that from day one, Cole was always going to be an Asian guy. Because James Wan, who is an Asian producer, you know, Asian-Australian producer, James Wan, of course, if you don't know, directed, you know, came up with the Saw franchise, Aquaman director, The Conjuring director, etc. James Wan pointed out, like, it's... We made sure that we wanted to cast an Asian man, Asian lead for the film, because as I've stated before, this is a franchise that is filled with Asian elements, that it'd be just kind of weird to not just make the Asian guy a lead. So
it was a little bit weird that they gave him the name of Cole Young and made it a point to say in the film, like, oh, I'm just an adopted kid. And like, why? Why couldn't you have given him an Asian name?
I wonder...
And he could have just been Asian.
I did hear... I don't know how much this equates to that answer, to that question, but I did hear that all the writer, the current writer, Greg Russo, did point out that, like, from day one when he was brought in, Cole Young was a studio note. The inclusion of a new character that didn't exist in any of the games to be the lead was straight up a insistence from Warner Brothers that they were like, no, you have to make this new character the lead.
That makes so much sense, because they want something original that they can hang their hat on.
Yeah.
And then if he ever makes it into the games, oh, Warner Brothers is getting all that money. You know, it's like, it's really, you know, this is the, and it's such, you know, there are certain parts of the internet, and you're going to know what I'm talking about here in a moment. There are certain parts of the internet that get very mad at characters that they like to call, like, oh, Mary Sue characters that are self-inserts who you can, you know, make, pretend as if you are that character because they're a brand new character that's joining the franchise. And normally the nerds get mad about these characters. Oh, what am I thinking of? Something called Star Wars with Rey,
where all of them are very
stupid and wrong. She's not a Mary Sue character at all. And then when there's a literal Mary Sue character, a literal self-insert brand new character that is just added just to make a story around all the characters that you know and you love, everything that makes sense in this world is just revolving around this character for no reason.
Yeah,
they're silent. And I think I know why. You know, it's really because it's a man. Yeah, because it's a man.
Well, okay. My whole problem with this, right? Mm-hmm. I love Louis Tan, and I want him to do so well.
Same.
When it comes to Hollywood stuff, right? Same. Louis Tan was almost our Iron Fist.
Right.
Oh, yeah. That would have... Oh, my God. That would have been perfect. Jesus Christ. So, how did they screw that up?
Yeah. Oh, well, that's a whole different show.
It's a whole different show. Mm-hmm. My issue with this is that this was an awful executive self-insert that they literally gave plot armor to.
Oh, shit. Didn't think of that. It's
literal plot armor.
Yeah.
The dude was so trash at fighting, they had to give him, oh, well, don't worry, we're going to give you armor as your arcana. And then that armor, every time you get hit, you get something cool. if that is not some, like, Gary Stu bullshit, like, I don't know what is at this point.
I can't, dude. I mean, here's the thing. Like, I am with you. I've been a Louis Tan supporter since I've heard about him. And I was, I guess there's all this pride that he's been showing on social media being the lead of this film, you know, like with his father being a stuntman in Hollywood. He was actually in Batman 89. And the fact that his father, when he said that he wanted to get into acting and be in movies, his father was like, okay, you should know that's going to be kind of hard for you and me, for guys like you and me. and the fact that he got to be a lead in a movie like Mortal Kombat after he lost Iron Fist, after he lost Shang-Chi, you know, he also auditioned for Shang-Chi, and that was given to Simu. That, and mind you, that's not a knock on Simu. I'm looking forward to Simu as Shang-Chi, but that's Louis Tan's been shown over and over again that he's been trying, and so this is a good opportunity to be the lead in something. But yeah, I mean, JPG, you're not wrong. You know, like, sadly, that's sort of like the character they gave him. And so the audience has to try to care about this guy who's not any of the characters that they grew up playing. Mm-hmm. And as much as Lewis tries, the character is so kind of okay, blandly written that there isn't there to make me fall in love with him, because there's not much I can think of concerning him. And I might argue this movie has a personality character problem that the 1995 film does not have.
And, you know, maybe this is getting too deep into it just to start off. I definitely had this weird thought where when we start with Scorpion being played by such an actor as Hiroyuki Sanada, like, I was like, oh, yeah, they just got him for that beginning part. And then he's going to be like an inspiration to, because this is his, you know, of his bloodline, right? That's what Cole Young is, the most recent generation of fighters that has Scorpion's bloodline. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, okay, so he's going to be Scorpion. Like, that happened in my brain.
I think so many of us thought that same thing. I totally
and I
agree
was
with
so,
you.
When he didn't get the Scorpion power, he got this plot armor.
So
when he got that, I was just like, oh, so I guess Scorpion will show up later. And then he did. And I was like, okay, yeah, that makes sense, I guess. Like, because, you know, Scorpion has to be in this movie. That's the thing.
Right.
So when they didn't give him the Scorpion power, it just really baffled me. I was like, it's right there. Like, it's all mixed up right there. But it just, it didn't deliver it.
Why did he get Tanfa? I don't understand why he got armor and Tanfa and, like, you could, like... Like, the Black Panther vibranium.
Yeah, where it,
like,
absorbs it. Yeah.
Yeah, absorb blows and all that. I just think, like, the Arcana just felt bad, right? Like,
Cole, that whole idea was so stupid. I could not.
You're such a trash fighter.
They make such a thing in the 95 version where Raiden has a part where he says to the fighters, in the 95 version, Raiden says, like, you don't need to worry about all these powers that you see. Your fighting comes from within. Like, you just need to fight well. It doesn't matter that Sub-Zero can freeze you. Like, if you can fight well, you can beat him. And in this one, it's like, hey, can everyone have powers? Yeah. Oh, sounds good. Yeah, everyone has powers now.
This is my kind of general problem with this movie, is that, especially watching the 95 really close to it, is that the 95 movie, and I've maintained it's a ridiculous movie that makes no sense that we all agree upon, but in a weird way, it does technically make a little more sense than this one, because at the very minimum, the 95 movie is simpler, you know? People enter the island, there's a tournament, they gotta fight people, and they gotta win.
You're right, I think there's an elegance in the first film's simplicity.
Yeah.
Right?
Here, you got this, we have to learn our one-up, we have to learn our power moves. We have to learn our special moves.
Where Raiden says, I've gathered you here as X-Men. I mean, as Mortal Kombat fighters.
Yeah. And, like, there's all this, like, complications with, like, Cole's backstory and then, like, this other crap with, like, Outland and, like, it's all over the damn place.
Kind of in a very screenwritery way, and I want to say it like that.
Sure.
Kano is able to steal the show because he gets all the goofy lines.
Okay, now I'm gonna be the bad guy in this conversation.
Oh, please do.
I've heard so many people talk about Kano in a positive manner, and I'm gonna be the one to go, I got tired of Kano really quickly.
Hey, guess what? Big same.
Really. Okay. Okay.
I literally do not understand why Sonya Blade did not just kill Kano in the desert when she had the chance.
I think my thing with Kano is that, like, I got it. He's a funny guy. And I got it that Josh Lawson is a funny dude. I get it. And every time I hear somebody go, oh my God, he's clearly the best thing in the movie, I got exhausted with Kano 30 minutes in. I get it. I get it. He's the he's the funny one. And the problem with that, you gave all the comedy to him, and whereas in the 95 movie, it was like nicely spread out between everybody, you know.
Also, Cole Young has a couple of funny lines, but they're not like like you said, he has no character, so it just kind of like, okay, I guess he said something funny.
Yeah, no, same.
I think Josh Lawson did an incredible job with what he was given.
I'll agree to that.
I think Kano as a character took up too much space.
Yes.
And I mean, okay, so and I have the perfect example of this. We only meet Liu Kang halfway through the film, mm-hmm. and he's one of the main fighters.
Yeah.
Played by Ludi Lin, which, by the way, I did not recognize him.
He was
and was absolutely shocked when I was like, wait, is this the Black Power Ranger?
From the Power Rangers 2017 movie, yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I was genuinely shocked. So he did an incredible job really seeping into the role and really, like, losing himself into the role itself.
I liked him as Liu Kang. I liked him in Power Rangers. So I like Ludi Lin, you know. I'm bummed that he was regulated. I'll be bummed to say that he's sort of been regulated to... Whereas the 95 Liu Kang gets to have a little bit of, like, you know, like an everyman quality and a little sense of humor. Like, I'll always love the scene where Liu Kang just throws Johnny's luggage into the water.
Oh, yes.
But here, Liu Kang's regulated to exposition, you know, and that type of stuff, you know. Though all being said, I think a mutual of mine, Laura, on Twitter, she points out, like, by far the best shirtless scene of the year goes to Ludi Lin as Liu Kang. And I will jump on that boat for sure.
Oh, yeah. No. 100% give that to him.
But yeah, I mean, here's the thing. Tadanobu Asano, who plays Raiden, like this Japanese actor, I'm a huge fan of. Massive fan of this guy. In terms of his Japanese film work, right? Like, he's been used here a couple times in the States, and he's been, you know, to several degrees of success. But I've really, really loved his work in Japan, and I was so excited for him to be Raiden. And I was kind of bummed that, like, again, Christopher Lambert gets to be a literal shining light of charisma and humor, and Raiden here gets none of it. Again, he's an exposition machine, you know. Like,
and not just he kind of, like, part of his thing is, like, you know, he kind of shits on all of us. Like, he's just like, he's like, you can't fight, you suck, we're gonna lose, get out of here. Like,
right.
And that's not, I don't understand why would Raiden, like, this is the wrong Raiden, you know? Like,
yeah.
A characterization of this, he is supposed to be the protector of Earth.
Yeah.
And now he's just given up? Like, that doesn't, yeah. You know, that's not good or fun or interesting.
No.
I would also say, I'm a little bit disappointed by, you know, they did reach out in order to get these, and I hate using the term no-name actors, mm-hmm. but, like, these are actors who are fresh to the scene, right?
Right.
I mean, you have Max Huang as Kung Lao, Cece Stringer, which this is Cece Stringer's very first film as Melina, mm-hmm. Mel Johnson, she played Nutara.
On top of all that, I mean, this is the director's first film. Simon McCoy had worked on commercials before this. So it's already on top of a cast of people who are not as experienced or haven't broken out, so to speak. It is a director who has never done a feature film before.
Right.
And I'm kind of disappointed with how the writers, like, treated a lot of them. Like, we get Kung Lao finally, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's awesome and then immediately gets taken out by Shang Tsung, right?
Right.
I think, and this is the one that hurts me the most, right? Joe Taslim as Sub-Zero.
It's, Joe Taslim.
Go ahead. We don't get enough. We don't get enough of him, right? And the one thing that I always point to is if you ever want to see Joe Taslim as peak, just incredible film, you have to watch The Raid.
Yes. I will add, not only do you have to watch The Raid, I love him in The Raid. He is amazing in The Night Comes for Us.
Oh, God.
Like, you want to talk about a movie with amazing martial art fight scenes, and they're bloody, gory as hell, watch this movie. Because this movie outdoes a lot of what Mortal Kombat 2021 tries to do. Because I think, and I actually said this on Twitter, it's like, you get the guy who directed The Night Comes First. No, I'm sorry, no offense to Simon McQuaid. But if you get director Timo Tejanto, who directed Night Comes First, to direct Mortal Kombat 2, we're going to talk about a totally different movie that's going to be at least, like, way more successful with the fight scenes. The fight scenes are fine in this one. They're totally fine.
Yeah.
But they're not as good as they could be. You know?
And they're not even, like, set up as little... It's only when you get to the end of the movie, the literal end of the movie, they set up all these, you know, fighting scenes where they decide, okay, you are going to fight, you know, Melina, and I'm going to fight Cabal, and, like, all these things. And they say, we're going to teleport you to these different locations and do these things. And I was like, this is what I wanted the whole movie.
It's also
And you only gave it to me in the last
And they were all
minutes.
Edited together in a haphazard way.
And there's no tournament. It's a movie. Everyone talks about a tournament, and there's no tournament.
they basically, what they were doing in this movie is they were trying to rush to get to Annihilation as fast as they could. They forgot to do the first movie.
I want to say... And some people don't even think it's enough, which I can understand that. But I do want to say that even though it's not in it as much as I want it to be, the other character that JPG so perfectly said in our last segment is here. It's just sort of like subtly here. But the theme song is here. And I kind of liked...
Is it?
Yeah. It is. But it's not... I gotta give it credit for it. I gotta say it's there. Because it is there. It's just not as good as it could have been and not as good as it was in the first movie. But
I think that's the crux of this whole film,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
It's this whole film is not as good as it should have been.
But it's not nearly as bad as Annihilation. I wanna bring that up. Like,
no.
I know it's a low bar.
That's the low bar.
It's a low bar, but... If someone's going to tell me Mortal Kombat 2021 is the worst Mortal Kombat movie, I went, no, because Annihilation is still the worst thing I've ever seen. It's still one of the worst movies I've ever seen. And it's by far the worst Mortal Kombat movie. This is fine. That's my feeling, this movie.
It's misguided.
It's misguided. I definitely think it's misguided. And room for improvement if they do a second one. Like, I would be open to another one. But... they have to, like, but my listings of what doesn't work are as follows, you know, like, the fight scenes aren't that great. You gotta fix the fight scenes. You gotta give everyone better character work and better personalities, because it's lacking in that department. Do the goddamn tournament.
Well, let me tell you when I knew things had really gone wrong for this movie.
Mm-hmm.
So when Cole discovers his plot armor, and then he kills Goro.
Yeah.
I was like, we haven't even started the tournament and we've killed Goro? What is going on? Like, Goro's the champion.
I kept making the joke as he's fighting Goro that I went, hey, Cole, I know the answer. Punch him in the dick.
It worked at least once.
Punch him in the dick.
Like, around that same time, the other thing that happens is, so Jax, who is a character that did not really get any screen time in the original, shows up in the sequel with his robot arms, and then in the climax of Annihilation throws off his robot arms because he doesn't need them, and this one he needs them because they cut off his arms. His arms transformerize into better arms,
which I'm like,
and that's his arcana,
which like that seems unnecessary.
Very unnecessary. Odd.
I will say some things that do kind of work on me in this one is there is still some video game elements that I had fun with. Like, everything with Kung Lao, that's really cool. They did the buzzsaw hat thing, which I thought that was really rad. I kind of liked how they were kind of trolling Kano with Liu Kang with the sweeping leg maneuver. That made me...
Oh, God.
That made me laugh, because I sat there and went,
yeah.
I have not only been the victim of that move, I also have done that move. So while playing the game, that's pretty on point. That shit happens when you're playing Mortal Kombat. I kind of laughed at that, you know? And yeah, it's weird. I will say it's not a great movie, but again, if I saw this in the theater with a bunch of folks who haven't thought about Mortal Kombat since 1995, I think this movie would have worked with an audience, I think, especially when Scorpion shows up at the end and you hear him do the "get over here." I think the audience would have fucking freaked. But I don't know how much that would have lasted after the movie ended. You know what I mean? Like, everyone's like, "Hey, cool, Mortal Kombat did all the Mortal Kombat things." And then the next day, how many people would go, "I saw it. What the fuck happened to that movie?"
it's not as impactful as the first film was. I definitely agree with you there.
Yeah, I think that's the problem with it. It's trying to be a little bit of a crowd pleaser, but it doesn't work in the same degree as the 95 film.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it tries. It tries really
it's
hard.
It is not for lack of trying. You are correct.
It's not for lack of trying. Yeah. Because they're all here, you know, like Liu Kang, Sonya Blade, Kano, blah, blah, blah. But like, yeah, like they don't have nearly the same kind of impact as they did in the 95 film. And yeah, it doesn't help that like you have this new character to try to kind of getting in the way of everything, you know?
I want to mention one thing that is just so random, but did y'all love Cabal as much as I did? I don't know why.
Okay.
When Cabal showed up, I was just like, this guy's cool and I love him. And maybe it's because the first thing he says is, he shows up and he's like, "Hey, I hate Kano." And I'm like, "Oh, me too."
But there's no explanation as to how this dude is like, oh, he's human and he's from Earth. And he's in like this like iron lung Darth Vader suit. And then he's also living in the Outworld now. And like, how I know Kano from back when I lived on Earth. And I'm like, wait, what? Like, we've really buried the lead at this point. And why is this film not about Cabal as well?
Yeah, there's a bunch of new characters that show up in that third act. And I'm like, who? Why? You know, Cabal's here. There's a character, like, Reiko, who I don't really know anything about. And, like, I don't know.
Nobody wanted to follow Cole. Sonya would have been kind of cool to follow. Mm-hmm. You should have made the whole film about Scorpion and Sub-Zero. That would have been cool, too. Yeah. Cole should have just been the next Scorpion.
Sonya,
like, how did we mess up all of the basics?
I think my feeling of this movie is that it's trying, and I don't mean this now. I don't mean this in a positive way. The screenwriting is trying so hard to not be the original movie and to try different things, but it's so misguided and so directionless that it's going to like multiple roads, and everyone's like, "But why are we going to any of these places? Why did you make a big deal about Sonya not having the birthmark, and like making that a thing for her at the end of the movie?" I guess I guess that's the one up here from the original movie, is that like at least Sonya and Kano have a proper final fight, and Sonya isn't, you know, damseled. I guess that's your one up from the 95 movie, but again, low bar. And like it's trying to be too many things. It's trying to be too many things at once. And I can't help but go, I appreciate the effort. You're still kind of dumb and fun here and there, but man, oh man, do you pale to the, I can't believe it, because JPG kind of nailed it in the simplicity of the 1995 film. Who knew?
Yeah, and I think taking all that in, if it didn't try to be, you know, absolutely nothing like the 1995 film, then it would just be nothing new.
Please rate and review Nothing New, a Remake podcast, on your podcast app.
You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Nothing New Pod.
You can find us on Patreon at patreon.com/nothingnew.
Nothing New, a Remake podcast, is part of the Benview Network.
This podcast is a part of the Benview Network.
You can find this and other podcasts like it at BenviewNetwork.com.